Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Well, welcome in to the Action Line this morning. Brian Barrett filling in here for the day. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of things this morning. How are you, Dr. Thomas Cobble?
Yeah, did I get Cobble it right? Like Scrabble.
Yep. Cobble?
That's it.
Like Scrabble.
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. First time at the big radio station here?
That's right. Yeah. First time in any radio station, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now you're a radio star.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Right in front of all of our glorious equipment and all the blinky lights and that kind of stuff here.
There's a lot more tech here than I would have imagined.
Yeah.
It's a big tower behind me.
What about... I guess in an operating room, too, more than we would expect to see.
Yeah, it can be, for sure.
So give us a little background about yourself.
Gosh, where to start? Well, first, thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Mississippi, the oldest of four. I'm a cardiologist. My brother's a radiologist. My other brother missed one question on the LSAT going to law school. And so we're all kind of just academic people. And then I've got a sister who's a phenomenal English person. And did my residency here at Vanderbilt in medicine. Met my wife. She's actually from here. She's a native Nashvilleian. Her family actually lives here. My in-laws are all here in Murfreesboro. And we've been here about 16 years in Brentwood. We have four kids. We had four under six, which was super busy, and she did an amazing job. I tell my patients that I'm just the bank. My wife is the CEO. She does an amazing job running our family. I've just came out of an engineering background. My family was pretty athletic, and we've always kind of been into sports and performance stuff. And cardiology was a really good fit for me. And then you could also say I'm kind of a biohacker. So I'm one of these people that tries to figure out ways to use science to make things better and get more out of life, I guess you could say. So I have a lot of interest in a lot of different things, and I bring a lot of that to my practice.
So you've been practicing here how long?
So I've been in Rutherford since 2008. Okay. I was originally with HCA the first 15, 16 years, and then transitioned from HCA to Ascension in April of this year.
So early mornings, late nights, I mean, how does that work for a cardiologist?
Yeah, it depends. The situation I was in before was pretty heavy demand. It was a smaller hospital, but I was basically taking weekend call every other weekend for the greater part of 15 years, and it was a lot. And it is a lot of hours. I've tried to make it more manageable now. So I'm one of the things I try to do is be pretty efficient with my time. And there's ways to do that. And so I try to keep a pretty good balance, but it's tough. I used to say, like coming out of training, that everybody wants a doctor to make house calls at 2 a.m. Nobody wants to be married to one. And it's trying to balance those two responsibilities.
Especially no one with four children under six, right?
That's right. They're older now. So
that's good.
We have one who's going to be a junior in high school and another rising freshman in high school, two boys. And then we have two younger girls that are 11 and 13. So, and they all do travel sports, and they're all just great kids, and we're really, really proud of them. But it keeps us super busy.
Well, I was going to say, if they're doing travel sports, you are busy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So it certainly can be. Anybody going to follow in the family line here with
dad and
uncle?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. So my uncle, my mom's brother, is a surgeon, and our youngest daughter, who's 11, who's just crazy, crazy smart, she has been, this is going to be a reflection of bad parenting, but she has gone through every season of Grey's Anatomy, and she desperately wants to be a surgeon. And that fact, the other day I came home and she had, with her mom's permission, ordered a suture kit, like a practicing suture kit.
Ah.
And I got home and she had basically sewn the whole thing. And I was like, how did you do that? She was, I looked up techniques on YouTube and I'm like, oh my Lord. Like, so I sent a picture to my uncle who's a surgeon. And he's like, well, he's out in Arizona. And he was like, we're going to have to get her out. I'll take her to the OR and do some fun stuff. So
technique, how was it? Was it good?
Oh, she's really good. I mean, she's, yeah, it's funny. They're all, as you know, if you have kids, like they're all very different.
Sure.
She's really, really funny and just, they're all really smart, but she really has taken a liking. And it's funny because she absorbs stuff so quickly, being the youngest of four, her verbal is really good. And she's already like speaking language. I'm like, you could fake people that you've gone to med school the way you're talking right now. It's really funny. So,
well, I guess it's always flattering for a parent to have, someone who may follow in the family footsteps, if you will, but, that doesn't always mean that that's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just right. Kind of flattering.
No, yeah. For sure. I mean, we, you know, medicine has changed a lot since, like, my dad's a physician, like I said, my uncle, and there's a lot of changes. I mean, that's stuff we can get into, but I think for a lot of physicians that I know and talk to, and I have, again, a lot of different interest in that field, and I have a lot of different people in different areas, you know, there's a lot of reservation about their children going into healthcare in the future because of how it's changing. And there's a lot of demands around physician time that are not really patient-centered. And I think, you know, that's something that we all struggle with as physicians. We went into medicine for a variety of reasons, but majority is to want to help people. And yet we end up doing, like, I know people that will literally spend 2 and 3 hours after they get home to keep up with the paperwork, because they're doing so much during the day and trying to get so many people seen and done. And that's kind of the system that we're in. And so that becomes pretty onerous at times. So,
and when there is an issue with online paperwork and it becomes paperwork again. I know you've gone through that recently. So
we did. That was awful. I was actually I was supposed to have my first day of clinic at the Rutherford Hospital, and I walk in and they're like, you know, the system's down. And one of the things that was kind of a draw for me is their system, unlike the one I came from, didn't crash very often or didn't have issues. And so I was like, you've got to be kidding me. What? And then it turns out, you know, it was a nationwide hack and national issue. And so I was like, oh, so yeah, that was interesting to walk into that.
The only reason that, of course, we had news about that as well, but my mother-in-law at the time was scheduled for a heart bypass. And that got delayed a little bit because of that at Midtown. Mm-hmm. So we were going through that about the same time when that happened. So, but thankfully for her, month and a half after recovery, you couldn't tell anything's happened. So
that's great.
You know, she did very, very well with that, which is one of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about, because I remember going through that same thing with my father probably 20 years ago. And it just seemed like his recovery was so much more difficult, and, you know, and I guess it's all individual, but a lot has changed to, I hear the word minimally invasive used quite a bit and things like that. So you said it just a second ago that your father, what he went through as a physician and now you, I'm sure it's completely different than what it used to be.
It is. I mean, there's just an infinite number of changes you could talk about. I think from a technical standpoint, yes, we've gotten much better at acute and trauma care in our healthcare system. Techniques for surgery, techniques for intervention. So the way that, for instance, in cardiology, the way we deal with heart artery blockage disease or valve disease or heart muscle dysfunction, that kind of stuff, that is all had leaps and bounds of growth, kind of in the same way that technology, and, you know, I often talk about patients, we go from the bag phone to the flip phone to now the iPhone, and just how rapidly that's advanced. And the way that we take pictures of the body and the organs and the things, that's all gotten so much better. And at the same time, you know, we're really sicker as a country. We have more chronic disease. We do, I think personally, we have a terrible return on investment on the money we spend in healthcare. We're first in the world and about 30th in results. So there's this discrepancy or disparate results between we're really good at certain things and other things we probably need to continue to work to figure out where we're missing the bar. And I can speak to that personally. 4 years ago, I was in a near fatal accident and had really, really bad trauma. My left arm was shattered. My left rib cage was shattered. I had roughly 14 hours of surgery over a week's time, wow. 3 different days. You know, and I was able to, with the help of a lot of people and a lot of support, kind of pull through that and get back to doing what I love. But at the same time, in my day-to-day practice, I see so many people who are just suffering day in and day out. And it's hard because I know so many things and techniques and ways to get people to have a better, fuller life. But it's those are all things that I did not learn in med school. And they're things that are available and simple, and at the same time, like we struggle to get people to buy in on that. And I think that's where, you know, again, a lot of what I try to do with people is to identify where their barriers are to understanding like what they need to do in order to get healthier or become more active. And we try to focus on those things, and sometimes it involves cardiac stuff, sometimes it involves other things. And because of my interests, I have a lot of interest in a lot of other things that can help people. I was able to recover really quick from my accident, way faster than most people would have guessed, because of my knowledge about, like I said earlier, the biohacking and the recovery techniques and things like that. So yeah, that's a lot of the stuff I enjoy sharing with people.
Mm-hmm. So this was a car accident?
Well, or? You would hope, but no. So usually in the summers, I go and do a men's trip. And what I mean by that is I'm part of a group based out of Nashville that does a lot of leadership around developing men's hearts. And not the heart like we're talking about operating on, but like your heart, your biblical heart. And usually we take a group of guys that are struggling through different things, and we go out in the woods and the wilderness, and we climb mountains, or we hike trails, or we do like real manly stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was a trip I had gone on with a good friend of mine who runs a leadership group out of Nashville. And they partner with a group called Wilderness Collective, and we were actually in Bryce Canyon and Zion out in Utah. We were driving UTVs, and some guys were on motorcycles, and I was like, I can't ride a motorcycle. I can, but I was like, I can't risk it. And of course, you know, as fate would have it, the last day of the trip, we're flying down a fire road in Bryce Canyon, and we come zipping around this corner, and I'm like third in the line, and I was a little more left in my line. I was drifting my machine around the curve, and there was a cattle gate that was hidden in some bushes, and I T-boned a steel post at about 50 miles an hour.
Oh God.
So yeah, that was not fun. So
I can only imagine. So years of recovery, or you said your recovery was maybe shorter than it
mine was pretty short. I was actually back at work in 5 weeks.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I'm showing him my scar from my arm.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was, and shout out to Jason Evans at Skyline, who was able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again in a miraculous fashion, honestly. I have a few good friends that are orthopedic surgeons, and they were like, yeah, I don't know how that guy did what he did, knowing what it looked like before. So he's a really talented trauma surgeon.
Well, and that could have changed your whole life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Had he, I mean, it's a funny story. This happened. I got life flighted via helicopter out of Bryce Canyon to a hospital in St. George. And the really funny story is my wife was a charge trauma nurse at Vanderbilt. So she can really bring the wood when she needs to. And she got on the phone with the nurses there in the ER and just read them the riot act on what they had done right and what they hadn't done right. And over the next 36 hours, we were trying to figure out how I was going to get fixed, because I remember the orthopedic surgeon walking in and looking at me in the room in the hospital in Utah, and he looked like a deer in headlights. And I was like, yeah, this guy's not sure what he needs to do. And so we were basically calling back here and rallying the troops. And the accident happened around 2:00 on Sunday. And I had an open wound, which any surgeon out there listening knows I needed to have been taken to the OR and washed out immediately, because I'd been in the woods for 5 days and had not showered. And So, but that actually didn't happen until Wednesday morning. And the reason for that was that the people in Utah weren't sure how they were going to fix me. And the one idea they had, they didn't have the right equipment. They were have to bring it in from Las Vegas. And once we kind of got wind of what they wanted to do, I had a good friend of mine, Dr. Rob Greenberg, who works here, who's phenomenal. And he was like, yeah, that, I wouldn't do that. And I was like, okay. So we basically arranged for me to be flown on a Learjet, medical Learjet, from Utah to Nashville. And I got into town Tuesday night around 7, went to the OR Wednesday morning, had a 3.5 hour washout and got it all cleaned out. Went back to the OR on Friday, had a 4.5 hour surgery to repair my arm, and then went back to the OR Monday to plate my ribs because all my ribs had been broken on the left side. And they did what's called a rib fixation, and that took about five and a half hours. So,
wow. And so, yeah. Put back together again.
Yeah, so put back together again. So, again, I think we do an amazing job in this country with trauma and with acute illness.
Sure.
And again, what I, you know, what we're up against is more of a chronic disease burden that's growing despite a lot of advances in medicines and things like that. So.
So I guess part of the story here, too, is if you have a patient that's a doctor and his wife is a former charge nurse, you're going to get.
Yeah. And I'll say, too, that it also made me a much better physician because I was in a hospital bed for 2 weeks and I dealt with the hospital food and I dealt with the nurses and the call lights and the pain pumps and all that stuff. And, you know, I didn't get any sleep multiple nights. You know, bless her heart, I had the nurse that took care of me at that hospital when I was here had just graduated nursing school. And like,
oh, wow.
You know, she was trying and I appreciated that. And I was in a ton of pain and they couldn't get the pump to work over and over and over. And it was a practice in patience. And I also got a really good, you know, kind of patient perspective from, you know, when the team would come in round and all that stuff, like all those things. It's like any physician would tell you, it's humbling to be on the other side of that interaction. And then having to make decisions about my care, like the plating of the ribs, if you talk to a trauma surgeon, they're going to say, well, there's really not a lot of great data for that yet. And there's not. And it was basically another one of those decisions that I made based on the reading I was able to do in the hospital bed and talking to, you know, different friends of mine and different specialties and things like that. And ultimately it was, you know, I felt it was the best thing for me in that situation, and it was a risk, and you know, I think it paid off. Yeah, it was tough.
Not a plating of the ribs you have at a barbecue place, right?
No, I mean, kind of thing, right? Yeah, I'd show you my X-ray, but I look like Wolverine on the left side. I mean, literally, I've got all this metal on all my ribs, and my whole left arm is basically metal. And
wow!
So
how amazing! And that was how long ago?
That was in August of 2020. Yep.
Oh, great year, wasn't it?
Oh, man, yeah. I was like, man, we've made it through COVID. I didn't catch it, and kids did well and all that stuff, and then boom, literally boom. Yeah, and my wife did a phenomenal job. Like, she had our boys at, I think, Dick's Sporting Goods, and she got this phone call from a really, really long, it was a sat phone, and, like, she didn't recognize it, so it didn't answer the first time, and then finally got the guy that I, you know, one of the leader guys that I went out there, got a hold of her and said, you know, hey, Aaron, like, Thomas has been hurt. He's still alive. Like, you know, and she had to go outside, and it was tough. But it was funny because as soon as it happened, like, I was conscious the whole time and I was able to get myself out of the vehicle, even though it was completely mangled, and then kind of lay on the ground. And I just, the whole time I'm like, Aaron's going to kill me. She's going to kill me. Oh my gosh, she's going to kill me. Ugh. And my second thought was, I hope I'm going to be able to use my left arm in the future. So,
well, you obviously knew that it was serious.
Oh yeah. No, I was very, and I was the only physician on the trip. So I was kind of guiding them through, you know, what we would call a primary secondary survey, trying to figure out like what was broken, what was working, what was potentially going to cause me problems. And I had a lot of fear because I knew the things that could go bad. And we were in the middle of nowhere. They stabilized me for about 45 minutes. And then I had to literally get myself into a F-350 that was the SAG truck, that was on 37 inch tires. And I had to climb up into it. It was not fun. And then we had to bounce down the trail 30 minutes to get to a zone where the helicopter could come in and actually pick me up. And by that time, I'm kind of going into, you know, 30 minutes, 40, it was about an hour and a half later, I'm kind of going into shock. And helicopter came, and, you know, they got me to the hospital there in Utah in St. George, and then kind of went from there. But, yeah, it was tough.
Man, well, we maybe spent more time on that than you really right? wanted to. But, you know, a very interesting part of your story, mm-hmm. and probably why, you know, the link between mental health and heart health is something that's very important to you, and the yep. holistic look at sure. At medicine. So when we come back after this break, we're going to talk about some of that. Dr. Thomas Cobble is joining us today from Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford Heart here on the Action Line this morning, and the program is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Take control of your account management and energy consumption with the My MTE app. Just download in the App Store. Manage your account, improve your energy habits, and more. MTE, serving to make life better since 1936.
By growing up in the restaurant business and being always around it, it was just something that was just second nature to me. I didn't realize the amount of work that was involved in it. I didn't understand and appreciate all that my parents sacrificed in order to provide for us. And now I'm very thankful and I'm very appreciative of the foundation that they laid for me so we could teach others to create what they have done to make it more of a legacy than just a passing of the torch.
This is Peter Demas inviting you to enjoy a meal with our family at Demas's Restaurant.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Most of us know to buckle up to protect ourselves in the car. Did you know you can offer your pet the same type of protection with a Ruffland kennel? This time of year, we usually look to vacation. If you're traveling with your pet, keep them safe in a Ruffland kennel. Here at Animal City, we are a Ruffland dealer. Come in and see us and get your pets some protection. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street here in Murfreesboro.
CBS News Brief. There will be a new option for detecting colorectal cancer. Garden Health's Amir Ali Talasaz.
SHIELD is the first blood test to be approved by the FDA as the first-line colorectal cancer screening option.
Colonoscopy still recommended for detecting precancerous polyps. President Biden's unveiled a plan to place new restrictions on Supreme Court justices. Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
The president is calling upon Congress to impose term limits, and he's proposing that the Supreme Court police itself with more binding and expansive ethics rules.
As of today, abortions in Iowa are illegal after about 6 weeks, before many women know they're pregnant. Planned Parenthood's Ruth Richardson.
We are standing by ready to help patients receive access to care, even if that means traveling out of state.
Iowa's previous rule banned abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Good morning. Wrapping up the paperwork on this wreck in South Nashville, 65 southbound at Armory. There's still a little bit of rubbernecking going on down through there in that southern part of Nashville. Valley View at OHB in Brentwood. That's a two-car crash. Still trying to wrap up that wreck in Madison at Needley's Bend at Forest Park Road. Hey, whether you need a new roof, roof inspection, or a roof repair, independent roofing specialists, these guys have got you. Check them out online at irsroofs.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
We'll see a few scattered showers and storms at times this afternoon. Partial sunshine develops, a high in the low 90s. Tonight's slight chance for storms late, a low near 74. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 74.
The Rick and Bubba Show, weekdays from noon till 2.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk. The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Our Action Line program continues today, and our focus is on Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford Heart. And today, Dr. Thomas Cobble joins us, and we've been hearing about him and his story. But there's also a part of you that I read on your bio mm-hmm. and some of the notes here that you have a passion for holistic medicine. So maybe talk to us a little bit about that and how that works with what you do every day.
Yeah, so in medicine in general, we as allopathic doctors kind of back in the 1850s, 1870s, kind of, we were their initial snake oil salesmen, and we kind of were the ones that were saying, you know, you need this compound, this chemical, in order to make your body work better. And at the time, there was a whole lot of other ways to look at health. The Eastern cultures are more what are called biophysical models. They look more at energy medicine than biochemical. And then it turns out, on top of all that, your state of mind, your mental health, has a tremendous impact on your health. And so, kind of how I came to that, when I was in my early 40s, I kind of went through a crisis, if you will. Like a lot of people, I come from maybe not the healthiest family. And a lot of that stuff that I kind of went through in childhood was starting to really bubble up. And I was struggling to deal with a lot of it, you know, anxiety, depression, and other things. And kind of through the process of working through all that and the way my brain works, I got exposed to a lot of different information around how our mental health controls our immune system, and how emotions, if you think about emotions, they're really there to protect us. All the emotions we have are kind of like warning signs on a dashboard on your car. It's like, hey, you need to check this or check that, or be aware of this. Or, I mean, take fear as a prime example, right? Everybody knows fear, and fear tries to keep us safe. And if you think about it, our immune system does the same thing. And so what we know is, especially in this day and age, when we experience a targeted rejection, say from a friend group in high school or the breakup of a relationship, our body actually goes into overdrive in terms of its immune function. And we've seen this in multiple different animals in the animal kingdom. If you take a wolf out of its pack, there's about 350 genes that start turning on to try to protect the wolf, because he no longer has the safety of the tribe. And so people that are constantly struggling with anxiety and depression or addiction or other things, their physiology is actually different than it would be at other times. And so when you look at chronic diseases, especially cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hypertension, there's a very strong link to inflammation with these. And when you look at people that have chronic anxiety, depression, and other mental health issues, their bodies are typically more inflamed. They're more on edge. They're more hypervigilant. Their cortisol levels, which is part of your stress hormone cascade, are higher all the time. And so these things actually lead to a lot of our chronic issues. And then our separation from nature, so that we're indoors most of the time, we're not connected to the earth. You know, there's something called the Schumann resonance, which is 7.83 hertz. And all mammals on the planet, the alpha state of the brain, which is what, when you're meditating or you're in a relaxed state and you're calm and everything's balanced, your brain is in an alpha wave state. That is actually the same frequency as the Schumann resonance that we connect to with the earth. And so when we live in cities with lots of concrete and electrical interference, we don't get that same kind of regulation from the planet that we would have gotten even 100 years ago before we had the electrical grid. And it sounds woo-woo, but these things actually scientifically have been shown to make a really big difference in people's immune function, how their genes express themselves, their propensity to develop certain diseases. And, you know, a lot of what I try to do is get people to kind of re-embrace a lot of that stuff. And then oftentimes what I see in my clinic is I have a lot of people that come through for chest pain, heart racing, palpitations, and I tell them, like, we're always going to rule out the organic heart problems, right? So there's things that we have to look for. And in my training as a cardiologist, we're looking for specific organic heart rhythm problems, or other structural issues. However, you know, 9 times out of 10, I can pretty much spot, because I have a good spidey sense for this stuff, that, you know, the person's dealing with a recent loss, like they're dealing with grief or they're dealing with depression or anxiety. And what they're experiencing is really the body's way of saying, hey, I need attention. Like, you need to pay attention to what's going on inside me. And I see this a lot, probably more so in women, usually kind of between 40 and, or sorry, between 20 and 50. I was going to say 30 to 40, but because they are handling, they have so many plates in the air. Mm-hmm. They're a wife. A lot of them are working. They have kids in school. Sometimes the kids have issues, and they rarely get a chance to, like, pay attention to themselves. And so And because of the changes in hormones every month, they're even more attuned to these things. And so there's a lot of times where, you know, I'll ask them a question like, when's the last time you had time for yourself? And they'll be like, oh my gosh, I haven't even, that's not even a thing, you know? And then we kind of talk through that, and I may give them some pointers on some things to do. And they may come back in 3 to 4 weeks and they're like, oh my gosh, like all my symptoms have gone away. And I was like, okay, like, that's great. And you know, the testing that we did all turned out normal, which it often does. Not to say that every time it's that way, but there's a lot that is, you know, not that I think, to bring up the CDC, it's a sore point for some people, but you know, it's estimated somewhere between 80 and 90% of doctor's visits are related to stress and anxiety. And I think that's true. I think we have grown so accustomed to being in a sympathetic dominant state, meaning everybody's in fight or flight to some degree all the time, because we have a 24-hour news cycle, because the lights are never off, so to speak, because there's constantly demands on our time. And so we kind of stay in this revved up state, and it's really hard to get into kind of the rest and restore part of the nervous system. And again, like there are studies that show this, like we are seeing an increase in sympathetic dominance around the world. And those things, when you stay in that, you tend to get sick. There's a book, I forgot the author, but it's like why zebras don't get ulcers. A zebra can literally be talking to its buddy. It's like, hey, Pete, how you doing? And then a minute later, the Pete gets eaten by a lion. And literally 2 minutes after that, the zebra's nervous system is back to baseline. You know, it's just like, wait, what? Like, we would never be able to do that. We would be cycling through that trauma over and over and over. And our bodies would relive it every time we do that. And so it's these frontal lobes that we have are a gift, but they also either take us into the future all the time, which is anxiety, which is an escape to the future, or we're living in the past. And so either place creates the same response in the body as if you're actually experiencing it, right? So when we experience trauma of any form, the part of our brain called the limbic system is achronologic. And so the way I explain that to patients, if you witness something when you're 8 years old that was really traumatic to you, to a part of your nervous system in your brain, it's like that still happened yesterday. And your body carries that. And when you don't have an opportunity to process that energy, because emotions are just energy in motion, then that energy remains in your body and it continues to cause problems. And there's literally just a myriad of books and papers in the scientific literature that talk about this. And we're starting to teach it in medical schools. Like there's starting to be more and more awareness that being emotionally and mentally healthy has a profound effect on physical health. But if you don't deal with those things, and we as a society and a culture, I think, don't grieve well. We don't sit in our stuff very well.
We're problem solving.
We're more about the objective and less about the relational.
Yeah.
And that really becomes problematic in a lot of different ways. Pascal said that man's greatest problem is that he can't sit in a room by himself, you know, quietly. And that's true. I think there's so many distractions. You know, I fight it all the time too. Like I go to pick up my phone and go, why exactly am I looking at my phone? Do I want a distraction? Do I want to get out of something I'm feeling right this minute? And being able to recognize that and go back to it sometimes, is a learned behavior that has dividends, but it's real easy in this day and age, especially as a physician with a bazillion things demanding my time all the time,
sure,
to not care for myself. But if I can't fill up my own cup, then I can't give it to anybody else. And I see that in a lot of parents and CEOs, and you know, leadership is really lonely. Being a physician in some ways is lonely. But having ways to connect with other physicians or other leaders is also something that I use in order to kind of fill my cup, so that I can show up for people, day to day. And so I got involved with a nonprofit about 5-6 years ago called the Refuge Center. It's based in Franklin, and I've given a couple of talks for them. So I talk a lot about what are called ACE scores, which is adverse childhood experiences. And so there was a huge study done by the Kaiser Foundation out out west and back in the 90s, and they basically showed that the more adverse childhood experiences you had, so parents went through divorce, or you lost a sibling, you lost a parent, you were emotionally abused, sexually abused, physically abused, just there's basically 8 questions, and the higher you score on that, no matter what you do, the more likely you are to develop heart disease, cancer, autoimmune disorders, everything. And so that's a lot of what I kind of bring to my day to day, is I'm not just looking at like, hey, which, you know, you got to stop eating fried foods. It's like, what do you do to take care of yourself? Like, what's your self-care program look like? How do you recharge? What do you do to feel connected? Right. So we know that loneliness is a huge problem, despite our quote connected social culture with the internet. Especially for people over 65, loneliness is a huge problem, and the medical consequences of loneliness are worse than smoking.
Wow,
right?
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is not hyperbole. And so, again, it, like I mentioned earlier about when you take a wolf out of its pack, all these changes happen to its body. Same thing happens in humans. Like, we are more of a social creature than we ever want to acknowledge. And we live in a way that's not really congruent with how we've lived for probably millennia, in terms of vertically integrated groups and grandparents helping parent kids. And that interconnectedness is not really there anymore. You know, now you've got both parents having to work, and kids are coming home by themselves, and kids are raising kids, and, you know, everybody's doing the best they can. And at the same time, like, all that stuff has a consequence in one form mm-hmm. or another. And I think that's a large part of, like, I heard a statistic the other day that in the 60s, only 10% of kids were obese. Today, it's like greater than 50%. You know, it's like, wait a minute, what? Like, we know more, we have better health care from a technology standpoint, you know, just between, like, what you said, between your dad and your mom and the 20-year difference. So why are we having all these struggles? And again, when we're not acknowledging the mental health and the emotional side of things, then those things can run rampant and cause a variety of issues for people.
Dr. Thomas Cobble joining us today. He is with Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital. And, you know, there are so many things that we could touch on there. But my kids keep telling me, you know, you're prime for midlife crisis. You know, they're grown. They're you know, both in their 20s. They're out of the house. They're doing their own thing. And do you think that that is also a tough time? You mentioned women 20 to 50. Mm-hmm. Is that men maybe
For sure.
That time, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm 50. And so I'm definitely, I think there's a lot that comes to bear, you know, when you hit that milestone. So much depends. What I see, let me say it this way. I got the privilege of walking yesterday. So oftentimes I'll meet with guys and we'll go like walk a park early in the morning. I usually find that's a really good way for guys to open up. And I was with a friend of mine yesterday morning, just an incredibly brilliant guy, has a great heart, and he is just struggling with anxiety right now. I mean, literally every morning he wakes up, he's just on edge and struggles with that stuff. And he's almost 40. And it turns out, like when I said earlier, I went through some stuff in my early 40s. That's, for a lot of men, that's around the time that we kind of hit this wall. It's like, you know, I did engineering and I did really well. And then I went to med school, did really well, became a cardiologist. Like, everything you put in front of me, I lined up, I knocked it down. I was a great performer. And I think for a lot of people, I got to this point where I was like, is this all there is? Like, I've done everything asked of me, and this can't be it. You know,
and now this is my day today,
right?
Today,
this is my
today.
Every day. And like, wait a minute, like, where's the next? And I think in part, that's kind of what led me down this path and kind of put me in that crisis, which I'm extremely grateful for. You know, that opened up a world to me that I never would have had access to earlier. And I'm, you know, just really grateful for that. I'm really grateful that my wife supported me through all that. And it was really hard on our kids and, you know, just a lot of collateral damage. I tell people, like, I was an F5 tornado for a time and couldn't figure out a way out of it, as smart as I am, you know. That was tongue in cheek. And so, Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for the quote midlife crisis, but I think that's getting spread out. Like, I'm seeing that in 20, 30, and 40, and it just depends. But I typically, in my experience doing a lot of this work, because I do a lot of work on the side with guys and stuff, it's usually in the early 40s where kind of the whole question my existence, existential, like, what am I doing with my life, happens. Some guys get it in their 20s and 30s, and I hate those guys. I have a really great friend who's a therapist who is just incredibly gifted, and he really found, like, he hit that in his 20s. And I'm like, I think probably one of my biggest, and I can't really say this honestly, because, you know, life happens and it plays out for you and not to you, but I wish, and I've told my kids that, like, I wish I had gotten the help I needed before we had kids. Cause I think the first several years of their life I was not present the way that I hopefully am today. And I want that for other guys. And I think that's part of why I do the things I do. And why I get involved in the things I get involved with, because I'll always carry that grief and that regret around, not being there for them the way that I wanted to be. And then turning out that I basically, in a lot of the things that I wanted to escape when I was a kid, I ended up being that way to them some. And that's, you know, it's much, much better now. You know, and again, credit goes to my wife, because she's an incredibly strong woman, and our kids are, I think, emotionally healthy, as much as any kid can be these days. And I don't take any credit for that. I really don't. I mean, she's just done such a great job with them. So yeah.
Pretty good stuff. Dr. Thomas Cobble joining us today. What is amazing to me, and people may be saying, okay, you keep talking, you know, Dr. Cobble, but I thought we were talking about heart-related things.
Right?
Well, you know, yeah, this is such a big part of it, though, you know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I can sum up, you know, the exercise and nutrition and the lifestyle stuff is a 5-10 minute conversation. And I usually give people, there's some great resources, friends I have online, Instagram sites that I'll send people to for, hey, if you just will kind of do these things, this will make a world of difference in your quality of life in terms of your health. So yeah, that stuff's super important. But I think when you look at it, you know, that's a multi-billion dollar industry, right? I mean, the nutrition, the supplement, the weight loss, like all that stuff. There's tremendous focus on that. Where I think we have not done a good job. We've not been skillful, as a good friend of mine says. We've not been skillful in how we discuss and talk about emotional and mental health. And, you know, again, all the stuff that I'm referencing that's out there is, at least when I went through medical training, medical school, none of it was discussed. You know, we get 3 hours of nutrition lectures. We get very little discussion about emotional, mental health. Trauma, as we refer to it in mental health, is not even talked about. At least it wasn't. It wasn't even in like the DSM-3, I think. It may be in the DSM-4, which is the book that all psychiatrists and everybody uses for mental health diagnoses. And yet, there's so much out there that we know about the way that trauma, and I'm not talking about big trauma, like people hear that term and a lot of times they think, you know, terrible sexual abuse or physical abuse. And that's true. Those things are absolutely true. That's the more kind of obvious in your face. But what's hard for people to see is neglect, right? It's hard to prove a negative. And so I have people that I'm friends with who are physicians that are in recovery, so to speak, and their biggest trauma is their parents were just never present. Like, they never acknowledged them. Not, you know, it's one thing if my father physically abuses me or hits me, well, he sees me. I'm seen.
Yeah.
Right? But makes if sense. You never even acknowledge me, I don't even exist. Like, that's a huge trauma, but most people don't consider that a trauma. And it totally is. It's actually worse, right? Emotional trauma is harder on the body than physical trauma. So if you're verbally abused or you're, you know, shamed all the time, like those things carry a huge physiological scar. And that's the thing I try to get people to understand. And when I give talks, that's what we talk about, is the way in which these things that I experience in childhood and in my teenage years, and even as a young adult, those things have a scar that they leave. One of my really close friends, when this accident happened that we were talking about earlier, I was in the hospital. He stayed behind in Utah, because he didn't want me to be alone, but he could only be in the parking lot because of COVID. And I was like in tears, you know, the next day, just thinking about my future and what I had lost, and, you know, I was in a lot of self-pity, to be honest. And he's like, Thomas, like, you're in the wilderness. Like, this is where God will work with you. And he goes, you know, now your inside scars match your outside. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I hadn't even, like, I'm tearing up talking about him. Uh-huh. But he was right. And so, you know, in a way, like, I was able to take a step back and say, hey, I get to practice resilience here. And I get to show my kids what it's like to, like, go through something like this and just accept it for what it is, put my head down, keep working, and show them that they can overcome the really, like, we can do hard things. And so, like, a lot of things that I've had to have kind of a frame shift on, I used to be, you know, woe is me, why is this happening to me all the time, why does this go this way or whatever, and today, at least most of the time, I get to change that and say, hey, this is happening for me to teach me something about myself or to grow me in a way that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And so, you know, looking back on the accident now, at the time it sucked, but now I'm actually grateful for it. Mm-hmm. Because it showed me parts of who I am that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And I think what I want to get across to people is going back and doing the work to deal with something that happened to any of us when we were younger. And a lot of us, like, aren't even aware of it. You know, a lot of times, like when I was doing work, as we uncovered more stuff came up and I was like, whoa, 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 we're not dealing with that today. You know,
wrong road.
We're going to pump the brakes here. And there was one thing in particular that took me about 3 months to get to a point that I could actually face it and deal with it. And I remember, and I still very vividly remember doing the work in that particular week. So I was doing something called EMDR, which is a really cool way of healing trauma within the brain, the limbic system. That part of our brain uses symbols and colors and things like that to talk to us. I just remember very vividly the night that I finally got to that thing and kind of dealt with it, and how scary it was and how grateful I was to have a therapist who was not only brilliant, but very empathic and caring to kind of get me through that hump.
It's a road traveled that only you are going to travel.
Right. So, and it has huge dividends.
Sure.
You know, there were things that I struggled with physically that have gotten a lot better since I've dealt with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. My anxiety is a whole lot better. My body works differently. Like I'm a lot more in tune with myself these days. And so that's been better. And that's given me, you know, a thing that I think is really important to understand is that's given me more capacity. So several years ago, my partner at the hospital that I was at went through a really hard time, had to ultimately step away from practicing medicine. And I had to kind of basically, didn't have to, but being who I am, absorbed his load. And so I started doing basically the work of two doctors, you know, kind of full time. And I remember thinking if that had happened 6, 7, 8 years before, I would have completely spun out of control and probably blown my life up. And yet, because of the work I had been fortunate enough to get to do, and had the people to come alongside me to help, you know, I was able to do a really good job with that and handle it, for the most part, pretty well. There are definitely some days I was not so skillful at handling things, but as a general rule, you know, did a lot better. And so that's been a big thing for me. So I just, I'm always talking about mental health and emotional health. You know, I'm really proud of the Refuge Center. We've just opened or about to open a 15,000 square foot building. We raised $9.1 million the last couple of years, 3 years or so to open this thing. And we have an incredible model. We treat everybody regardless of ability to pay with some of the best therapists in the state. And so it's a really, really cool thing. And I got involved with that because when I came back from this process, you know, 18 years ago, I started seeing my patients in a completely different way. And I was like, oh my gosh, like you really need somebody to talk to about this. You know, I had people, I was able to ask questions, and I remember people would be like, how do you know my story? We just met. Like, because I'm really good at, you know, I have this sixth sense of picking things up and being able to kind of drill into things pretty quickly. And sure enough, I would get them to, you know, somebody I knew that could deal with whatever I thought, you know, when they would talk, I said, okay, well, I've got somebody that I think would be great for you. And they would come back, you know, a couple months later, and their whole affect, they would be lighter, brighter. And they were like, I had no idea coming to see my cardiologist, I would get this kind of thinking. But it's actually what I needed, right?
Sure.
And to me, that's the definition of a healer. And so I am a cardiologist by training, but so much of what feeds me on a regular basis is being able to help somebody become aware of something that they may not really realize is affecting them in the way that it is. And once we can create the awareness, well, that's oftentimes the hardest step. You know, it's like they would say in AA or something, you know, admitting to a problem is the first step to solving it. And so it's real similar. It's like acknowledging that, like, yeah, this happened, or yes, this is something I'm struggling with that I don't like to talk about, but recognizing that it's having significant impacts on my health is a lot of what I do day to day.
I just looked up and we have blown past the top of the hour, but it's been great having you here today. It's been really fun.
Thanks for giving me a little bit of a platform to get that stuff out.
That's awesome. Yep. Dr. Thomas Cobble joining us today, Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford Heart here in Rutherford County. We're so grateful to have Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford right here in our community. And don't forget, if you missed any part of our conversation today, you can check the podcast. It'll be up shortly at WGNSradio.com.